Welcome back to Through the Word and the Book of Exodus, chapter 22 today.
Are we still in the boring chapters?
Well, if by boring chapters you mean are we still in the Law of Moses, then yes. But I thought you decided the last one was pretty interesting.
Well, chapter 21 was fascinating. I just don't know if we can pull off two in a row.
Well, today we cover theft, stand your ground law, borrowing, responsibility when borrowed stuff is damaged, premarital sex, sorcery, bestiality, then we move on to aliens, widows, orphans, money lending, and God's compassion. Still sound boring?
Are the aliens from outer space this time?
No.
Ah, well. Doesn't sound too bad. I'll try to stay awake.
Well, thank you very much. Very nice of you. Your vote of confidence is overwhelming.
Now, you know I'm still kidding. Mostly. But before we jump in, let's get a quick reminder of what Moses' law means to us. Remember, these rules were given to Moses for the people of Israel, his covenant with them. They do not apply to us, at least not directly, but the principles behind them are still good. In fact, they're way ahead of their time, like millennia ahead.
Right. The principles of responsibility and civic duty, or how to settle disputes with equity and compassion, these are relevant in every culture, in every time. And how we as individuals and society should treat aliens, widows, and orphans, this should speak to us all.
Still not from outer space?
Still not.
Too bad.
I think I'll start saying foreigner.
I thought we weren't doing classic rock titles anymore.
Moving on. The first half of chapter 22 focuses on property rights, theft, settling disputes, and assigning responsibility in cases where one person damages another person's property.
These laws are just plain practical, and I'm sure they were used extensively to settle disputes in rural Israel. They also provide some outstanding practical wisdom for us today. You might not borrow an ox, but every kid knows what it's like to lend something to a friend and not get it back, or get it back damaged. Or maybe you lent your neighbor a tool, or you borrowed their car. What do you do if damage happens?
Whether there was theft or just negligence, the clear focus of each law is taking responsibility, along with fair and equitable restitution.
For Christians, we're not bound by these rules, but living with God's law of love on our hearts means being responsible, making restitution for past sins and even accidents. We'll walk through all of those laws and what Christians should learn from them on the B side. But right now, we want to move to verse 16.
The second half of chapter 22 moves on to social responsibility. In verse 16, if a man seduces a virgin who is not pledged to be married and sleeps with her...
Wait. Do we have to read the kissing parts?
You just can't resist quoting Princess Bride, can you?
Sorry. I'll focus. In the Bible, sex is always intended for marriage. Sex before marriage was called fornication or sexual immorality. But what if it happens? Verse 16 says, get married. If a man sleeps with a virgin who is not engaged to another, he must pay the bride price or dowry, and she shall be his wife.
The dowry was the common custom for a man to pay the bride's family, just as Jacob worked for Laban. The term bride price is misleading. This is not a purchase of property. Basically, this law says, get properly married.
Again, God is working within the culture. In that time, a woman who lost her virginity before marriage was often unmarriable. So God protects young women. If he seduces her, he marries her.
But what if the guy's a loser? Verse 17 gives the girl's dad the right to refuse, though the man would still pay the dowry. That would teach young men responsibility.
As usual, we are not bound by this law, and our culture is very different. But the rightness of sexual purity still applies. Sex is still holy, and it's still meant for the covenant of marriage. And sex still has a price, and young men are still called to take responsibility, even after a mistake.
Next up, sorcery, bestiality, and idol worship are all punishable by death. God is serious about the holiness of his people.
You know, with adultery and sorcery both banned, I can't help but think of stories like The Scarlet Letter and The Crucible.
And rightly so. Both of those books are stories of Christians incorrectly applying Old Testament law and forgetting grace. That's a real danger for all of us. Neither story is anti-Christian. If anything, they are warnings to Christians against hypocrisy and religious legalism, and we should take that to heart.
And the final laws here offered strong protections for those most likely to be oppressed. Verse 21, "Do not mistreat or oppress a foreigner, for you were foreigners in Egypt."
See, Chris? Still not outer space.
That's too bad. But I do love this law. Don't mistreat the outsider, because you know what it's like. I think every one of us knows what it's like to be the outsider at some point. And God calls everyone to treat foreigners with compassion.
Verse 22, "Do not take advantage of the widow or the fatherless. If you do, and they cry out to me, I will certainly hear their cry."
Every now and then in the law, the word selection gets a little more passionate and personal. God holds the widow and the orphan close to his heart. And this time, rather than prescribe legal punishments from a judge, God declares that he will handle it personally. "My anger will be aroused, and I will kill you with the sword. Your wives will become widows and your children fatherless."
This is the heart of God taking a stand to defend the weak. And anyone with the heart of God flowing through them today will always be moved with compassion for the last and lost and the least. To immigrants and refugees, to orphans and widows, the heart of God draws near, and God's people are drawn with it.
Then in verse 25, "If you lend money to one of my people among you who is needy, do not treat it like a business deal. Charge no interest." Taking advantage of people in need is big business. Always has been. Today, you can find pawn shops, payday loans, and high-interest credit ready to help in any emergency. Only it's not real help. Debt keeps you down. So for God's people, God says, charge no interest. If you're going to help, then just help.
Now, to be clear, business deals are not banned here. Investment with fair interest can be good for everyone, but taking advantage of the needy is always a sin. And God adds a lesson on compassion, because he is compassionate. If you take the guy's cloak as collateral, don't let him freeze. Give it back when he needs it. Notice that if you don't, God says, "When they cry out to me, I will hear, for I am compassionate."
The compassion of God. The nature of God is at the heart of the law. He is just, and he is compassionate. Though it is true that ancient culture was very different from our own, and some of these laws don't quite make sense to us, the heart of God is unchanging. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Search through the law books of history, and you will find men protecting the rights of the powerful, the few lucky enough to be citizens, the nobility, business owners, or slave owners. The law of the Lord stands out as radical in history, protecting the rights and providing opportunity for foreigners, slaves, widows, orphans, and the poor.
In modern times, laws have come a very long way, even in the last century, to fight racism and battle oppression. Ironically, some who fight for human rights today point to the Bible as an antiquated establishment of inequality. They cherry-pick references to slavery or marriage entirely out of context and culture, and claim that the Bible's God supports oppression. It's a sad irony. If those verses were the entire Bible, they might have a case. But the pervasive and repeated command of the Bible is compassion for the outsider, protection for the weak, mercy for sinners, justice for the oppressed, and love for all. Ours is a compassionate and merciful God who instructs his people to act justly and protect the rights of all peoples.
But the true fault is not with the skeptic. When we as Christians fail to live up to our calling, when we allow and even defend oppression, when refugees suffer and the poor are taken advantage of, and we do nothing, or worse yet, defend the oppressor, it is our hypocrisy that denigrates God's word. When we cherry-pick verses to obey because they favor ourselves, when we love God and neighbor but redefine both to fit our own image, then we are the root of the skeptic's blasphemy. For the ancient Israelites, the final verse of Exodus 2 reminds them and us, "You are to be my holy people."
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.
Okay, Chris, no more quotes now. I mean it.
Anybody want a peanut?